It's time now for 90 Mile View, the series that gives us glimpses into the lives of folks who live and work in worlds different from our own. Dr. Gary Yarbrough has practiced family medicine for more than 30 years. His book, House Calls, recounts some of his more memorable moments and patients. Since 1994, the good doctor has tended to the people in and around Parsons, Kansas, and he joins us now from his office there. Dr. Yarbrough, good to have you back with us again. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Steve. Good morning.
When we last talked with you, you explained your decision to stop accepting all forms of insurance because literally buying into the Affordable Care Act was cost prohibitive for you. Since then, the health exchanges have come online. How do the Kansas rates compare to your fees right now?
Well, they have four different levels of insurance named after metals. There's a bronze, a silver, a gold, and a platinum. Now, most folks will buy the bronze and silver because they're less expensive. And the funny part is their office copay is $45, and I peg mine to this postage stamp, so it's $46. So it's only a dollar more.
But, Dr. Yarbrough, I hate to tell you, the cost of a postage stamp is about to go up, I guess, to 49 cents. What are you going to do then?
My fee will be $49.
You're going to keep it tied to the postage stamp, eh?
That's right.
I like that.
I figure if you know, the economy is such with inflation and everything that the post office needs 49 cents, well, then I should be $49. That's only fair.
You have a number of Amish among your patients. Will they have to sign up for insurance as well, or how is that going to work?
No, that they have a specific exemption from Obamacare.
Because of their religious affiliation?
Yes. Even the Canadian single-payer system exempts the Amish.
Huh.
They are allowed to pay cash for their care.
All right. Well, I understand that you've been busy this summer writing another book. This one is titled House Calls and Other Stories. How many tales do you plan to have in this edition of the book?
No, this one is actually called Office Calls.
Office calls.
Stories.
I see.
And the vast majority of my professional life has been in the office and some in the hospital, other than just house calls. So these are stories from in the office, in the hospital, and even out. One's about a little boy I saved from drowning at Martin's Fork Lake near Harlan, Kentucky, years ago when I was a resident.
How did you do that?
Well, it was my second summer getting extra OB training there, and it was the end of that second summer, getting close to it, and it was the 4th of July, and my wife said, "You promised to take the kids swimming out there." Now, Martin's Fork Lake, the coal companies have huge coal trucks. They brought in tons and tons of white sand and made a swimming beach for the people of Harlan. So I took the kids there. We're swimming, and my daughter runs up, who's about 10 years old, and says, "Daddy, a little boy's drowned down the beach." I said, "Right, Tanya, sure." She said, "No, really." So I said, "Watch your brothers," her little brothers. And I ran down there, and a couple of guys were pushing on his back and pulling on his arms, you know, the old-fashioned resuscitation
thing,
like a sailor over a barrel. And I said, "I'm a doctor. Get out of the way. Let me have him." And I turned him over and started. I gave him a couple of breaths and then checked. And he had no pulse. And I pounded on his chest and checked again, and he had a pulse.
Huh.
So I just kept doing some rescue breathing, and pretty soon he coughs and sputters and vomited up about a gallon of lake water. And they took him to the ambulance crew, and the twisty, windy roads through those hills and hollers are such that, you know, it's 14 miles to Harlan, but it takes about half hour for the ambulance to get to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And they got there, and they said, "Oh, my, we got a live one." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, Doc, most of the times we come out here, they're dead already." So we'd had enough swimming for the day, and so we went back into town, too. And got a shower and walked over to across the parking lot to the hospital. We were in an apartment building between a Piggly Wiggly strip mall and the hospital. And we walked over there, and he had been admitted. He'd aspirated a little bit of lake water in his lungs, so they put him on antibiotics, and we were going to watch him a couple days. And from there, we walked over to the Piggly Wiggly to get our hot dogs and buns and some marshmallows and a watermelon for our 4th of July dinner. And suddenly the gal who had hardly said a word to me for two summers in a row just started talking up a storm. "Oh, Dr. Yarbrough, that was a wonderful thing you did out at the lake. Why, people here really appreciate that when someone takes care of one of their own. And we sure hope you come back here and practice because you'll be really busy." And on she went. And the lady had hardly said two words to me for two summers in a row. But that's because the folks in Harlan County, Kentucky, have been taken advantage of and looked down upon. Yeah. They just don't trust outsiders.
Yeah.
So I'd forgotten about it and went back to my residency program, and about a month later, in comes a lady to the program director's office, and I get called in, and I think, oh, what did I do wrong, you know? And it turns out she was from the governor's office, and the mayor of Harlan had nominated me for a honorary Kentucky colonel.
Wow.
And I was awarded that certificate as a Kentucky colonel for having saved that little boy at Martin's Fork Lake.
Oh, good for you. Hey, doctor, tell us about another story in Office Calls and other stories about the man working in a tobacco barn in Kentucky and what happened to him one day. It's a great story. Tell us about that.
Oh, Lord, yes. Well, tobacco barns are like 2.5 stories high with these real tall, skinny shutters on both sides and tiers of racks where they stack tobacco. A tobacco stake is about 5 foot long and sharpened at both ends, and they stab it into the ground. And then as they harvest the tobacco, they cut it at the plant at the base, and then they impale the stem on these stakes. And then these are hung in racks inside the barn for the tobacco to dry.
Right.
Well, this young man one time was scampering up to the top of the barn, getting the last of the tobacco out of one side of the barn, when he swung the stake and accidentally hit a giant yellow jacket nest.
Oh, man.
Now, in Kentucky, if you've got a mild winter and an early spring, these nests can get huge. And the yellow jacket's one of the most aggressive wasps there is. They'll attack you just for walking by, you know, whereas a regular paper wasp will just sort of ignore you as long as you don't bother their nest. Well, he comes flying down out of there faster than they'd ever seen him move. He had a swarm of several thousand yellow jackets covering his shoulders, neck, and head.
Oh, my gosh.
And he went screaming, running around in the barnyard, brushing all these things off. And they finally grabbed him and put him in the back of a pickup truck, drove him to my office, and he was hollering something. They couldn't make any sense out of it at first. And finally they realized he was saying, "There's a yellow jacket in my ear."
Mm.
So they get into my office, and his face is all puffy and his neck from dozens of stings, and he's jumping from one leg to the other, hollering. And with the help of those three fellows with him, my nurse got him back into the treatment room and went and got me and had him hold the fellow down, and I looked with the otoscope in his ear, and sure enough, I saw the wasp crawling in the ear canal, antenna brushing against his eardrum, you know.
You're making me wince, doctor.
Yeah. Well, I had learned a little trick working in emergency rooms. I filled a syringe full of Marcaine, a local anesthetic, you know, to numb you for stitches.
Yeah.
And I used the syringe as a squirt gun and gently filled his ear canal. Well, it turns out the local anesthetics paralyzed the insect.
Mm-hmm.
And so it couldn't move, it couldn't hold on anymore, and it just floated right out to the top, and we crushed it.
But they didn't teach you that in medical school, did they, doctor?
No, I learned that actually from a medical journal, an ER medical journal. And we got him a shot of cortisone and some Benadryl and then asked him to call back the next day. And he did, and he said he was doing a lot better. The swelling wasn't so bad.
Well, doctor, we'll look forward to your new book, Office Calls and Other Stories, which is coming out soon. And come back and visit with us again sometime soon, okay, doctor?
Yeah, that nest was 2 feet across.
Wow, that's amazing. Always good to have you, doctor.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.